Today on Next Level E-Commerce.
As soon as word got around that I was quitting, I thought people were going to come up and go, why? I don't get it. You had everything. People came up to me and came into my cubicle and sat down and said, take me with you.
Oh, man.
You're listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Each week, we feature inspiring stories from entrepreneurs who have taken their business to the next level. They share successes and failures and what kept them going when they felt like giving up. And here's your host, Isaac Smith.
Thank you for joining me for episode 57. I've got a story for you today that you are not going to want to miss. Do you belong here? Everybody says they want to quit their job and start a business. Being an entrepreneur sounds really cool. But have you noticed how few of those people take action? So that means if you're here and you've done the work, you are in rare company. On the show today, we are diving in and exploring what sets us entrepreneurs apart from everybody else. What weird, strange, and special people we are. And so that means there's a really good chance you're going to identify strongly with what we're talking about. We're exploring this subject through story. My guest today is Caleb Roth. He's been flipping books on Amazon since filling his college dorm room up with his classmates' textbooks. He started a blog talking about this stuff, and then eventually he created software. What a journey he's had. You're going to find out what he learned from his employer, his employees, and his competition when Caleb tells his story in just a minute. Before we get started, I want to say if you're new to the show and you're intrigued so far, I know you're going to love this episode. But before you get sucked into the story, make sure you don't miss next week's episode. So take just a minute and hit that subscribe button on your phone so you don't miss the next life-changing story. This episode of Next Level E-Commerce is brought to you by Summit E-Commerce Advisors. That's my company. Later on in the show, I'll tell you how you can get your bookkeeping together for the end of the year, which is coming up, by the way, without pulling your hair out. Now we're going to dive right into the story. You can find links to everything we discuss in our show notes at nextlevelecommerce.co/57. This is one of those stories that I can relate to so strongly. The feeling that there's something else out there. First and foremost, freedom. When you're working for the man, somebody else has got their thumb on you all the time, having to ask to go to the bathroom. No, I made that part up, but that's what it feels like, doesn't it? Ugh. My guest today, Caleb Roth, was searching for that freedom. And like I said, he's been hustling since he was in college. You're going to get an inside look at the mindset of what it took to take that side hustle and make it his full-time thing. And then how he transitioned that into serving a broader audience and building software. I just love it. We're going to take a close look at what it takes to be an entrepreneur versus someone who just talks. And now, here's Caleb Roth.
I had a corporate job right out of college, went and studied business at a small liberal arts school in Indiana. Anybody knows where Warsaw, Indiana is, give me a holler. It's a small town, but it's got some far reaches. And I got a job in the orthopedic industry. That's the main business there. So I was marketing for knees and hips and thought I would be the corporate guy for forever. I didn't know if I'd stay there or, you know, leverage that and go to a different company. But corporate worked, paid the bills, was a good gig, and, you know, I had a great job. So life is set. Well, I realized, like many of you, that that really wasn't for me. I was an entrepreneur. I really valued freedom. It kind of felt weird going to my boss and asking for a day off or to come in a little bit late because something was going on. You're laughing at that.
I've got to interrupt, man. This is something that I've been saying. I hated that. That was the worst thing. I hated saying, please, can I have an hour or two to go to a doctor's appointment? Or can I take my family to the beach this weekend?
Oh, yeah.
And oh my gosh.
It feels weird asking, like, you're a grown adult. You're trying to ask another grown adult for permission to do a basic human something, whether it's, I need some me time, I'm going to go golfing, I just have to run to the bank before it closes. Like, you had to justify everything. And it's fine. That's one of the, you know, it's the price you pay to get a guaranteed salary, I guess. But yeah, I think entrepreneurs, and what was it for you? For me, it's freedom. I think entrepreneurs get into it for a variety of reasons. They want control, freedom. Maybe it's the money. Maybe it's the prestige. For me, it was always about freedom. I don't know what it was for you or for some of the listeners out there.
Yeah. Freedom was a big thing. And for me, I don't know quite how to describe it, but I had this pressing urgency of that grew stronger and stronger over the years that this isn't where I should be. I don't like this. I got to get out of here. That was it for me. But it went boiled down to, I think, probably just the freedom.
Yeah, it was the pressure.
And excitement and adventure, I learned later on, it was a big part of it.
And did you know you were an entrepreneur from the beginning, or did you kind of stumble into that realization at some point?
Oh, man, I had no idea. But, you know, looking back, it's interesting because it turns out I'm a fourth generation entrepreneur, and I never even realized that until a few years ago. My dad, my grandpa, my great grandpa, all business owners.
Huh. Maybe there's something genetic to it.
Yeah, but it wasn't ever something that was encouraged or instilled in my family. It was just what they did.
Right.
But, who knows?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. You get into it for different reasons. I got to talk about books because I'm a book flipper, but I'm a big Malcolm Gladwell fan. And I think it was Blink. He wrote about what makes work satisfying. And he boiled it down to three things. He said autonomy, so the ability to have like work for yourself, dictate your own schedule. Complexity, like if we do the same thing every day, it gets boring. And then you need that, the thrill of the hunt or the excitement or the adventure. So autonomy, complexity, and then a direct connection between effort and reward, i.e. if I work really hard and learn a skill and apply it, can I actually make more money? Versus when I worked for DePew, it was a Johnson & Johnson company. I might work really hard and my reward at the end of the year was a 5% bonus. Or maybe I got a raise and worked my way, you know, further up the corporate level. But there wasn't that direct connection. It was a 5% bump. Like I could work twice as hard as the guy next to me. He got his bump and I got my bump. There wasn't a direct connection. And so that's a little bit, for me, that felt disingenuous and weird. I guess most people don't. Most people don't feel that way. And I guess that's what makes us as entrepreneurs tick.
I'll tell you, I've got to interrupt again. I'll tell you, for me, that really drove me crazy. So I was an architect and a lot of architects, the work-life balance is way out of whack for architects. And we would be working long hours, working on deadlines. And my reward for working harder was more work. But we all leave at the same time each night. So I realized the faster I get this stuff done, the better I do, the more I have to do. And just it was the opposite of reward. It was a punishment. What's going on here?
Yeah, we used to joke at corporate, if you want to get something done, give it to someone who's busy, because they'll find a way to add it to the plate and get it done. I mean, that can be a problem too. The work-life balance can be a problem, especially when you work for yourself. There's no boundaries. This is my office and my family's right there. My house is right there. Of course, we're a little bit different because of quarantine right now, but the lines can be very difficult as well. You can work all the time. You got your phone, you got your computer, you're on vacation, you're working. So you have to figure that out. And that's what you got to figure out what you're working for. Otherwise, you'll just keep working more.
Yeah.
So I was in the corporate world. I didn't view myself as an entrepreneur, although I kind of always wanted to end up as one. I flipped all kinds of stuff in high school. I only worked one summer job because I realized that I was making $5, $5.15 an hour. That was what my time was worth. And I could make more than that working on my schedule, flipping random items like, you know, cornets or trumpets or Polaroid cameras or books or anything from garage sales and flipping on eBay. That was kind of the thing when I was in high school. And I was able to work my schedule, not give up nights and weekends to go work at the golf course and be able to make the same amount of money or more. And so I kind of always did that. I kind of thought at a margin, all right, my time is worth $5 an hour. I work 20 hours a week. That's $100 a week. So if I can find a way to supplement or substitute and find a way to make $100 on my schedule, then that's a huge win because I don't have to go give up 20 hours of time to make the same money. Yeah. So I think that's a big key thing is entrepreneurs think at a margin. Anytime I want to buy something back in high school or college, I didn't have a lot of cash. I try and buy two or three and flip, you know, all but one of them to try and pay for the item I was buying. So I would try and, you know, sometimes you'd buy way more than you needed, but that wasn't the point. The point was, can I get something for free or leverage it or use my flipping skills to essentially get what I'm after?
So where did this come from? Like, because I was in college and I was poor too, but that idea, that never occurred to me. What gave you that thought to do that?
I think I just the way my mind works. I always saw those things. I was kind of the jack of all trades in college. People came to me for all kinds of random things. Hey, I don't know if you know anything about this topic or how to turn this into money or how to do this, but if anybody knows, maybe it's you. And so I just love, just like you, that adventure. And I like to be a resource and I like to feel wanted. And so that's just kind of what it was. But I saw those opportunities. I would buy, I was doing a lot of textbooks for my buddies because they didn't want to figure out Amazon. So they go to the bookstore and that, you know, the textbook that they just finished, they paid $150 for a textbook and now it's selling for the bookstore gives them, you know, $15.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to hate the bookstore. And I have friends that work at them and I don't hate you. We just hate the bookstore. And so I'd say, hey, that same book is going for $80 on Amazon. Let me sell it. I way undervalued myself, but I said, I'll do it on consignment. I don't have cash to buy it, but I'll sell it and I'll ship it and I'll take 10% of the profits. And of course, my friend said, absolutely. So my dorm room turned into this with shelves full of books and boxes full of books. And the post office knew me by name. And that's just kind of what we got into. So that's awesome. I guess it's the way I viewed things. And it got really hard. We'll get through some of my story here. But when you go to start hiring people, you like for whatever reason, we just assume that everybody thinks about life and things the same way we do. Right? Very ethnocentric or whatever the right term is, very, very me-centric. We think that everybody thinks that way. And so entrepreneurs, we are definitely in the minority, but you think that everybody else views life through the same lenses as you. It's just, that's just the way we do it until you realize there's other points of view. So when we go to hire people, we'd be nervous. Well, if they see how to like what the process is to sell a book, they're just going to quit and go do it themselves and make more money. Why would they work for me? But then you realize there's a lot of people that just want to trade time for money. They want to come in. They don't want to think. Not a knock against them. It's just exhausting. They don't want to do it. They just want to come in, do a job, get paid for it, and go home. And I never understood that because that's not the way I'm wired. But people are wired that way, and that's all right. You know, to each their own.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I've thought of that as well. It comes in a lot of different ways, but I remember back when I was in my job, I don't know. I just didn't, I was good, but I never wanted to be put in more effort than I needed to because I didn't see any reason. Like what's my, you know, what's this to me? I don't have ownership in this, but you think about like your team and when you see them, that's funny that you brought that up because I've had those thoughts like, what if I share too much with this team? Or I think specifically with salary and, you know, pay, like if they see what I'm taking from this, will they feel jealous or like that? Wait a minute, he's taking too much. But then, you know, when I thought about it more, I realized, no, there is a huge difference between being an owner and an employee. They haven't seen all the sacrifices I've made.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you know, everybody wants to be the boss or hate on the boss or, you know, hey, they're making too much money and it's easy to hate Bezos and these other people that have built really good companies. But you're right. You don't know the risk that they've put in. You don't see the work behind the scenes. And if everybody wanted to be an owner, they could all try. I mean, not everybody's going to succeed at it.
Right.
But that's a really fascinating one. If there's a really interesting, I'll just keep referencing books since that's what I do, but yeah. The Great Game of Business, I think it's by Jack Stack, if that sounds right. Hey, my wife organized my books. They're all color-coded now, so I don't know where they are. But oh, The Great Game of Business, I've had several people recommend it to me. I don't see it right there. But
The Great Game of Business.
And I'm about halfway through, so I can't fully give a recommendation on it. But they talk about that. How much transparency do you give the employees? How do you incentivize them? How do you tie their efforts into the overall goals? And they actually err more on the side of being too transparent and sharing, I don't know if it's individual salaries, but salaries at different levels and how the business is doing. Because if you're just doing your job and you're not being efficient in a certain area and you didn't realize that that area that you're being inefficient at actually is very important to the bottom line of the business, you don't really know because you're being incentivized a certain way. And when they found that they tied some of that, like they found that people were really creative and that like found like they've solved problems in their individual roles that management never would have seen, but because they were transparent and shared what the goals of the company were, what the profit margins were, et cetera, that allowed people to then see the full picture and actually make better decisions. So it's an interesting way because you can go one end or the other. I'm not going to tell them anything. I'm going to hide it all. That's a funny thing in our business. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it. But our software, you can do what's called hidden mode. So you can give an employee an app or let them log in. They scan a barcode with a barcode scanner and it tells them just red or green. Is it worth money or not? And they think, well, I'm protecting it. I don't want the employee knowing what it's worth. Well, all they have to do is switch apps, go to the Amazon app and literally scan the same book. Right? Or go to any other number of apps. And just because you're hiding your data, if someone really wants the data, they're going to figure it out. Like, well, I'm going to hide it because I don't want them taking the expensive books. Well, it's not that hard, right? If someone wants it, they're going to figure it out. So there's different schools of thought. We've always just been more transparent and shared what's going on and tried to help people do it. We've even encouraged people to quit and go start their own business. Some people have taken us up on it. Most people don't.
Yeah.
Again, there's a difference. I don't know what percent of people are entrepreneurs, but it's probably under 15%, maybe under 10%. I don't know what the number is.
Yeah. That is really interesting because you think somebody has this in them that they can do it, but you just watch the reality of you know, watch their actual choices and decisions and it. Yeah. So for example, I had a VA who I thought was very entrepreneurial. I thought eventually she'd go off and do her own thing. Maybe she will one day, but that company is sold. And as far as I know, she's still working with the same guy. But yeah, it is interesting that there's no judgment. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that's their disposition.
Well,
this isn't for everybody.
For sure. And there's tons of times when I wish that I could just shut my brain off and come home from work at night and not think about like, hey, I have these 10 things to do. Just go, hey, I'm working for somebody else. They pay me well enough.
Yeah.
And I do my job and I come home and I flip a switch and I'm done with it. And that's rare. That's maybe 5% of the time, 95% of the time I'm happy to be who I am and doing the things that I'm doing and always searching for that next thing because that's just the thrill of the hunt. That's what I live for.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's no shame. I'm not putting them down.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're selling themselves short. Maybe they figured out different priorities and who knows.
That is funny. I think about that because it's going to sleep is like, oh, dang it. Brain, yeah. Why is it now? Now is the time you decided to start thinking about stuff.
Well, so have you found a good mechanism for that?
Outside of NyQuil,
outside of medication, yeah.
NyQuil, melatonin. Yeah, there's actually I have. So Headspace is a meditation app that most people know of. There's so much stuff in there now, but they have quite a few sleep programs. But the most basic one, the one that was in there from the beginning, as far as I know, is really, really good. And that thing just actually, I've learned to do it on my own and it just knocks me out. Huh. It's pretty amazing, actually.
Do you know what it's called?
They've changed, like I quit using it a couple of years ago, but there's, if you go into the sleep section, there's a bunch of them. But as far as I know, it's just sleep meditation. And there's okay. a 5-minute version and a 10-minute. So basically what you do is you relax your body. You're laying on the bed. You breathe. There's a few things. You notice your weight. That's not unique. But what is sort of unique, I guess, about this one, it's the 5-minute version is good enough. You don't need the 10-minute version.
Don't have time.
So, yeah, I mean, if I explain it to you, you'll go, oh, well, that's obvious. But I've tried a bunch of similar things, and none of them have worked like this one.
Yeah.
But so essentially, yeah, then you start going through from your toes, your feet, you just shut it off. Mentally, you turn it off, and you all the way up to your head. So you relax your body and then count backwards from 1,000. And
like reverse counting sheep.
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you, for whatever reason, that does it for me.
Huh. I'll have to check that out. Yeah. I try, you know, to have a notebook or throw something in the Trello board or whatever to try and get it out of my head because I'm nervous. Oh, I might forget about this by the time I wake up, and then your brain's trying to hold on to it.
Oh, yeah.
We have a 2-year-old now, and he's got a white noise machine. And I don't know why I didn't discover this earlier, but it started like we'd be on like hotel trips or on the road or something, and he'd be in the same room with us or sleeping in the closet of a hotel, and we'd have the white noise machine on there, and I was sleeping like a baby, like literally. And I was like, man, there's probably something to this. So we've got one in our room now, and we turn it on. It's just the white staticky noise like a baby has. And for whatever reason, my mind can grab onto that and it allows me to just shut it off.
Wow. Interesting.
So that's been interesting. Well, let's jump back into the corporate. We'll get to the app and everything. All right. We could talk about stuff for hours, but
yeah.
We'll talk about the app and stuff in a bit, but this was the big part. And if you're listening to this, you think you're an entrepreneur, I'll share a little bit of the struggle I went through. I had a good job, a corporate job. It was making 6 figures. It had a lot of promise of growing. I'd been there 5.5 years, and it has a pension even. So as far as like secure companies, that was it. Like I was set. I didn't have to worry about finances. As long as I didn't develop a crazy gambling problem or drug habit or something, I was going to be set with money for the family and everything else. And I just kind of like you did, it was over a period of a while, I became bored with what I was doing. It was kind of the same thing over and over. And I started looking up the chain and going, all right, my boss, what's his role look like? What are the headaches he has to deal with? What about his managers? You know, what's the level of bull crap they have to put up with? And started looking ahead further up the chain. What's his manager doing? What's the director doing? What's her manager doing? And started realizing, I don't really want to be playing this game 5 or 10 years from now. That just didn't interest me. And it's a great company, nothing against it. It's just, that was not me. And it just felt like, it felt like prison.
Yeah.
And so I began plotting my escape going, all right, I definitely have these entrepreneurial itchings and urgings. Where do I go next? We've been smart. We always, just like I talk about business people live at a margin. You got to have your personal finances in order. And we live at a margin in our life. We make this much and we don't spend, you know, most people make this and they spend this with credit cards. Mm-hmm. And if you're smart, you make this and maybe spend this, right? There's no margin. And so you go, hey, I want to quit my job. And a thing like the coronavirus hits and most people are bankrupt or out of money within a couple of weeks. We don't have a buffer. Like that's human nature. That's American nature. So if anything else, figure out a margin, figure out a buffer, whether it's your business or your personal finances, because that'll open doors for things later. And so we began plotting the escape and said, what do we know? And I'd sold books in high school. I'd sold books in college. And we said, let's just see what's in the world of books. Let's just see what happens. And I was too chicken or maybe too smart, I don't know which, to just quit my job, right? I didn't have another option to jump into. My in-laws would have been like, what are you doing with our daughter? It would have been difficult. And so I said, all right, let's prove this. Just like if you ever ride on a ski, like behind a boat, right? You want your weight balanced on either one. If you put it too much on one, you'll fall off. But the idea was I'm riding on one ski. I'm working the corporate life, working my way up the ladder. I want to just reach out and test the water over here and just see if I can have a side hustle, another form of income. And eventually I want to jump over and make that my income. but I'm too chicken to just jump over and quit, right? So we just started saying, all right, we know books, and I'm a numbers geek. So I opened a spreadsheet and said, all right, what if we found 100 books a week? That's a big number, right? It's a lot of books. It's not a little bit. It's not a crazy amount. It's a reasonable amount. What if we found 100 books a week? And I don't know how many we'll sell. There weren't really metrics on that. I was like, maybe we'll sell, I don't know, 2% a week. So we'll sell 2 books. All right. So week one, we sell 2 books. Maybe they're $15 a piece, $20 a piece. We sold $40. We profited maybe half of that. Okay, that's not glamorous. What about week two? We find another 100 books. Now we have 198 in inventory and we sell 2%. Now we sold 4. Okay, we made $40. No, it's still not glamorous. Fast forward 3, 6, 9, 12 months down the road, can you actually build a reasonable business? And the answer was, well, if we can find 100 books and if 2% sell, and if they sell for that price, then yeah, I don't see why not. This could work. And so we just set out with that simple goal. Can we find 100 books a week? Starting with our shelves, starting with our neighbor's shelves, going to thrift stores, asking our neighbors, asking our family, asking our friends, networking, going to garage sales, whatever it took. Can we find 100 books a week? And so we just started doing that on the side. It broke up the monotony of work. It gave us something to do on nights and weekends. And we just started building the business. And we were having a blast, just like, you know, you mentioned, Isaac, the thrill of the hunt or that adventure. That's what it was for us, is can we just make this successful? And that's about awesome. About 9 months down the road, we were hitting it. We'd already ramped up to 200 books a week by that point. And we were selling. We reached 6 figures within the first year. That's not profit. I know you're a big believer in profit with your 2X 1K challenge, which I still want to learn more about. Maybe we'll circle back around to that. But it's not what you make. And guys show their top line sales numbers all the time. I could care less. I don't care if you're a 7-figure, 8-figure, 9-figure seller. What are you keeping? And what's the margin? Because if you're selling 8 figures at 2% margin, that's still a great business. But you're like this far. You're one little mistake away from just falling on your face. And so I'd rather try and optimize for what I'm trying to live for. If my goal is 80 grand a year in profit or 150 grand a year in profit, I'd rather have much higher margins. And instead of having to sell 10 million to extract 150 grand, I'd rather only sell 500,000 to extract 150 grand. That's just a much more content, more peaceful way of living.
Yeah.
But I digress. So we built that up and we didn't replace my income. Right. We were just barely reaching 6 figures. And I think the profit on that was somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 grand after expenses, after cost of goods, Amazon's fees, et cetera. And but we replaced our expenses. So we could at least live off that. Right. I was taking a big pay cut, a 50, 60% pay cut. Plus, if my wife decided to keep her job or not, plus we had to figure out health insurance. But I knew that we could live on that because we lived way, 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 way below our means. And that gave us that buffer and that freedom to pursue it. So we're the harder part then, it looked good on paper. We knew that, hey, if we're doing this part-time and we ramp up and quit my job and that allows us to go travel and go to other library sales and network with other schools and other people, we know we can grow this thing and at least replace the income after a while. Right? 15 hours a week, 20 hours a week on something versus going to 50 or 60 hours. We knew we could scale it. The hardest part then, because I'm a numbers guy, I'm analytical, we knew we could make it work, but I didn't just quit my job. It was, all right, what are people going to think? Will they be able to replace me? I fill a vital role at my company. They need me. They don't, but you think they need you. Mm. What will my peers think? What will my parents think? What will her parents think? And so you just wrestle with all these sides of it. Like, how are you going to explain it? How are you going to prove that this is a good decision? And I wrestled with that. And I finally went to my boss one day. We'd actually negotiated a way to get, we wanted to move. We were in Indiana still. And I got a deal. One of the distributors for the same company reached out and said, hey, we want you to come work for us. They lived in Denver and I always wanted to live there. And I said, actually, I'm looking for a change. But they said, great. What's it going to take to get you out here? And they were thinking I was going to like slide over a napkin with a price on it, right? Here's what you got to pay me. I said, this is weird. I said, do you have any way to work part-time? I'm building my own business. We're getting to the point where it's getting there, but it's not quite there. I'd love a little more stability still. And I'd love for the opportunity to move. And I think I can help you guys, but can I move and work part-time? And they said, actually, we've got a doctor that we'd like you to cover. He works 2 days a week and you can maybe work a half day in the office. Sure. and we'll pay you X amount. Obviously, it's not full-time income because it's not a full-time job, but I was able to negotiate that. And I said, sweet, let's go. So I finally had, and partly that was for stability. So it's still the chicken-mindedness of it. Mm-hmm. Part of it was I wanted that excuse. I didn't just want to walk into my boss and say, I'm out, or, you know, hey, in 2 weeks, you're going to notice I haven't been here in 2 weeks. You know, I've always wanted to say that. But I guess part of it was wanting that excuse of, hey, these guys are going to hire me out here. I'm going to go work for this doctor and peace. So we had that excuse. The in-laws understood. We, you know, packed everything up, moved out to Denver. And 4 months later, I actually quit that job too and have worked for myself ever since. So it was kind of that stair step down, whether it was the reason to quit. But the moral of the story is, if you're stuck somewhere and you're a feeler like I am, and you're nervous about what people are going to think, it was awesome. Because as soon as word got around that I was quitting, I thought people were going to come up and go, why? I don't get it. You had everything. Everything was set. You had a great career. Why are you doing this? People came up to me and just, like, you know, I didn't have an office, but they just came into my cubicle and sat down and said, take me with you.
Oh, man.
You just realize that there's so many people that are like, man, I want to do that too. I want that freedom. I want to be able to quit, but I've got a family, or I could never make it work. But they wanted that as well. So very few people didn't get it. They were like, good for you. Take me with you. I wish I could do the same thing. And that was like a huge weight being lifted off my chest, because I was worried, is this going to work? Like, one, are we going to be successful? And if not, we'll be okay, because we'll just spend less. We'll figure it out. But what are people going to think? And is this the right move for the long term? And man, as soon as I did it and got into that role, I'm like, I should have done this 3 years ago. So if we had to boil it down, if you're nervous about it, go find a side hustle. It's so much easier now than it was. This was about 5.5, 6 years ago now. Go find a side hustle. Find something. Try and build a skill set. Listen to this podcast. Listen to Mixergy's, another good one. Mm-hmm. There's so much free information out there. Just start listening and figure out something. Figure out a way to flip on Amazon. You can do books, and we'll get into my story there in a bit. You can do online arbitrage, retail arbitrage, wholesale, private label. There's so many ways to play the Amazon game. You could do eBay. You could do drop shipping. You could flip from thrift stores. Whatever you like to do, you could find a way to make it work, most likely, if you have the drive and are willing to put the work in. So figure out something on the side. Try and replace not your income, but try and replace your expenses. And if you can't get a handle on your personal finances, you're never going to have that buffer to step away. Profit First is a really good book. It really applies more to business. Mike Mihalowicz, I think I got it in front of me, actually.
Yeah,
you read
Mike
that one?
Mihalowicz. Yeah. Actually, that's funny, because in our company, we help people implement that. So that's a big thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
this is
Profit First.
This is huge. We're still trying to find a bank that will allow you to set that up properly. It looks like Ally Bank's going to do something similar. But you got a solution.
Here you go, man. RelayFi. Yeah, Relay. Okay. There's another one. I think it's called Mercury. We use Relay, and that's what we, with our clients, we help them set up through Relay, because they're great.
Can you do it for personal accounts or only business? Can you do it for business accounts?
It's for business. I don't know if you can for personal. In fact, I'm going to ask them that, because I want to do that for our personal finances, but I'm not sure about that.
So Noah Kagan, I don't know who came first, Mike or Noah, but Noah has talked about this quite a bit. He runs AppSumo. He's down in Austin. Mm-hmm. And he talks about, like, automating your finances. Him and then Ramit Sethi. I think those guys are two birds of a feather. But maybe Ramit does it, but they talk about, like, where does your money come in? And then where are you putting it? Basically paying your taxes, putting money into retirement, putting it into where you're going to spend. And that whole concept's like, duh. Like, if you don't tell your money where it's going to go, it's just going to go somewhere. It's going to evaporate. So Ally Bank lets you do, or they're going to roll it out where you can have as many sub accounts as you want, but Ally is not for business. And if you throw LLC on the name of it, they'll call you up and say, hey, you can't use this for business. I guess they don't have the right approval. So I'm going to check that out, RelayFi.
Relay. And you may need an invitation still, but I can get you one. Anybody who wants an invitation, let me know and I'll send you.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, I got the hookups.
Cool. Yeah, let me know. Be very interested in that.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and I've got some news for you. The end of the year is coming up quickly. It's a shock, I know, especially considering the year we've had. And what business owners hate to hear more than anything is now true. Tax season is around the corner. But before you panic, I have good news for you. You don't have to go through that end of the year freak out that you usually do come December, January, and your tax guy starts asking you questions. This episode of Next Level E-Commerce is brought to you by Summit E-Commerce Advisors, which of course is my company. We provide bookkeeping and financial services for e-commerce companies. And if you need help getting your books together before the end of the year, which I suggest you do with or without us, because the last thing you want are any surprises. So just set up a free call with me. I'd be happy to talk with you and help you choose the path that's right for you. And of course, if you just need somebody to do the work for you that you hate to do so you can get it off your plate and out of your hair, we can do that too. To set up a free consultation call with me, just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books. Again, that's nextlevelecommerce.co/books. And now, back to the show.
But check that out. I was going to say then Ramit Sethi's book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, is very good on the personal finance side of things. But actually, I'll shout out my college professor, if I can find, I don't remember what color his book is. It's called The Principle of Maximums by Roger Stichter. He's not like a main public author. It's kind of a small indie release, and he's just an accounting professor, but very influential guy. And he had this theory in college, which really stood with me. He goes, look, you're in college. I know you have no idea where life's going to take you, if you're going to get married, if you're going to be successful, whatever. But he goes, right now, start thinking about how big is my house going to be someday? And I'm like, well, I've never bought a house. I don't know. He's like, well, what do you need? Like, how big is your family? How big is your house? What kind of car are you going to drive? I'm like, I really have no idea. But his idea was set these maximums in your head. So be like, look, I'm not really a car guy, so I'm just going to stick with a Toyota. Like the best car I'm ever going to drive is a Toyota. I'm not going to get a Lexus, not a Tesla, not a, you know, whatever. I'm just going to be a Toyota guy. I'm going to drive cars that are a couple years old. I'm going to be fiscally responsible that way. Cause I just, and that goes along with Ramit Sethi too. What are your money dials? You know, pick things that you care about and spend lavishly on those categories. But he said, try and pick those certain things. What kind of food are you going to eat on a regular basis? What kinds of things do you do for entertainment? And it's a really weird exercise because, again, you go, oh, I don't know. I don't have money now. And I guess when I have money, I'm going to do things differently than, you know, playing cards and driving to Taco Bell three times a week with my buddies because that's all we're doing for fun. And it's a really good exercise because he goes, look, most people make, and it's the same thing I talked about earlier, most people make this much money and they spend this much. And credit makes up the difference, and they carry credit card debt, student debt, all these other things that weighs them down. He goes, that's okay at first. Like maybe your first job only makes 30 grand and your, you know, mortgage and everything else, you got to have a budget of 40. So try and trim back where you can, be smart about it, but understand that your ideal life is maybe 40 or 50 or whatever that number is. As you get increases along the road, that's fine. At first, you'll be able to bump up until you reach that ideal standard of living. But he says, after that point, the next time you get a raise, stop bumping up your standard of living. Don't go get that next car. Don't go get a bigger house. Don't lock into more debt. Leave yourself here and now have a little bit of wiggle room. And his whole thing is don't increase your standard of living, increase your standard of giving. But have that buffer so that you can invest it. You can give it away. You can just, you know, save it for a rainy day. And then over time, maybe someday you are really successful and off the charts. Now you just have a huge buffer. Imagine if you made $500,000 a year and only had to live on 50 grand. You've got 90% buffer. So when something happens like coronavirus, you're not freaking out because you've got a pile of cash saved up. Not that it makes you secure or immune or anything, but it gives you that wiggle room and that buffer to take risks or to make investments or to help others, whatever you want to be doing with it. And that concept really stuck out. And if, you know, when I had the six figure job, we were living on, you know, probably 40 or 50 grand a year was probably our budget. And if I had been spending all of it, it would have been very difficult to ever step away because I wouldn't have had that luxury. You know, if I had a $5,000 mortgage and lived in a really, really nice house and had a car payment, it would have been almost impossible to quit that job. You would have had to streamline your expenses first. I think I heard you say you moved back in with your parents at one point, and then your grandparents maybe.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, I had to get out, and so I don't know how I convinced my wife, and she's directly below me now. We're all working from home.
There you go.
And she in her office. Somehow I convinced her that we should both quit our jobs, that we should sell our condo, that we should sell all of our stuff, and then drive across the country, move in with my parents. And we were there for a little over a year. Then after that, we moved in with my grandma, who was
closer
to... And
the goal there was to cut back expenses, right?
Yeah. Okay. Drastically reduce expenses so that I could make us rich. That didn't quite happen, but you know, I'm happy we did it now, but there was a lot of struggle between now and then, you know, but yeah, it's tough.
And yeah, don't be afraid to take drastic measures if that's what it calls for. But you know, if you're feeling those itches now, start making those steps. If you go, hey, I think I do want to, like, I've got this idea, or I want to start this tech thing, or I want to start a Shopify store, or do something. Right. I keep hearing all these success stories, and by golly, I want to be one of those people that goes out and does it and just stops thinking, maybe, you know, what if? Then start making those steps now. You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to jump in whole hog. I think you'll be more successful potentially if you do. But if you're chicken like I was, find ways to stair step down and try and find ways to slim your expenses back. Start giving yourself a little bit of margin, a little bit of peace, a little bit of breathing room, because that's going to open the door to start making some of these moves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's enough of my personal finance high horse, but I think it's really important to have a handle on that. Cause especially if you can't manage your personal finances, you're not going to be hardly any better at managing your business finances.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was that. So quit my job, moved to Denver, had my wife quit her job, and we became full-time booksellers. And like anybody else doing entrepreneurship, it becomes lonely. You don't have an office. You don't have a water cooler. It's just you. You don't really have any friends in the business because we didn't have enough money to afford any employees. I mean, friends at that point. And so you start reaching out. And what I did is I went and built a blog. It was called thebookflipper.com, and just started sharing my journeys flipping. I didn't have any courses to sell. I didn't have any products to sell. It was literally just, hey, entrepreneurship is lonely. How can I help you in your business and share things like Mythbusters? You know, people say that books ranked on Amazon over 1 million don't sell. Well, here's proof that they do. And so we'd kind of lay out those type of arguments, and we just shared a lot of data because that was my talking language. That's what I understood. And so we just kind of built an audience of people that like data, liked to see, you know, hey, maybe there's an opportunity here. And we just started sharing our story and built, I don't even want to call it a tribe, it wasn't that big, but built an audience of people, like-minded entrepreneurs and book flippers, and then realized there was a lot of gaps in the market as far as tools, software, research ability on certain books. And we started leveraging that data, and we eventually rolled that into my shirt. Scout IQ is our brand. And we are a database. You can download the database of all the books on Amazon on your phone. And you can go out with a barcode scanner, even if there's no internet connection, if you're in the basement of a library or in some hick town that doesn't have good cell coverage, you can scan a barcode, you can hook up a barcode scanner, use your phone's camera and scan, you know, nearly every book. That's why I gravitated to books early on. Nearly every modern book has a barcode on it. And so it's super easy to research. And we kind of built a database of all the books, track their sales history. And so you can scan a book and not only know, hey, right now this is a $10 book on Amazon, but it also sells every 3 days. Like we were able to put that data into the hands of our customers. And so then we essentially, anybody that wants to get started, and books are a great place to get started. They're very inexpensive. You can start with what you have at home. It's pretty much an ungated category, meaning you don't have to get approval. You can just jump right in as a brand new seller, get approved on Amazon and start selling. And so that's what we catered to, was kind of that first stepping stone. Just like I had to have my side hustle before I just jumped in. You know, a lot of people want to get to wholesale, private label, and get into some of these bigger, you know, drop shipping type things, but they want to learn the ropes. They want to see if Amazon's right, and books are a great way to test the waters. So we help primarily beginners. They use our app, download it, go to library sales and thrift stores, and we teach them how to sell on Amazon. And then some of them love books so much, they just enjoy that thrill of the hunt and looking for adventure. And so they stick with books, and we get a lot of retirees, a lot of younger people just getting started that they just enjoy it. And then we also have some people that we call it graduate. They say, look, books were great. It was fun. I'm ready to go cut my teeth on something bigger. And then they usually go find somebody else that can help mentor them or learn from. And they'll go into some of those other categories that we talked about as well.
That's awesome. And you were telling me when we talked before that you have these meetups that you do, and that I like the, I love the in-person meetup because, like you said, you know, this gets lonely. And, you know, I built a team in my business, but we were virtual for one. And then also, like we talked about earlier, there's a difference between an employee and an owner, and there's not really that peer-to-peer connection. So the in-person events have been really important for me. So it's cool to hear that with you, with your tribe, you know, you're going around. Now, how often have you done these things?
So we do a couple things. One is called Turn the Page. So kind of a pun intended, but these are aimed for booksellers. And so I run it with, I'm a co-founder in a smaller listing company. Well, I'm a smaller co-founder. It's a listing app called AccelerList, and you can list books on Amazon. So we're kind of the scouting entity. We help you find them. They help you list them. And of course, we've graduated and moved into other products, not just books, and you can list anything through them. So they're efficiency plays. So kind of a good kind of hand-in-hand partnership there. But his name's Travis, and we go and we did these conferences. We did the first one right around 2 years ago in LA, and we do one every quarter now. We do four a year. And so we were coming up on our eighth or ninth edition, and we've had to kind of put them on hold for now with coronavirus and see if traveling comes back. But they're smaller events. We tried to do the first one we did, we rented a hotel, conference room, you know, people could rent a room, that sort of thing. We weren't trying to make money with it. That really wasn't the goal. It was to kind of foster community, let people know that they're not alone, also learn from other people. Like, you want to see that someone in this business is able to, like, not just sell $1 million, but maybe profit $1 million, or build a good business and profit six figures or 50 grand or whatever numbers they're after. So that was kind of the goal, is let's just get like-minded people in the room. Let's, you know, a lot of them were beginners. We had some middle level people. And then we said, hey, we'll fly in some of the gurus in our space, some of the guys that have bigger businesses. And so that's how we started. In our first event, I think we had 40 or 50 people show up, which was a pretty good event. And of course, we lost money on it because we rented the hotel and everything else that went into it, and catering, they get you on that. And we're like, man, I think we lost like $1,500 on it. And we're like, all right, well, we don't want to lose money doing this. How can we, you know, operate these smartly? So the next one, we said, all right, let's go to Phoenix. We're just going to rent an Airbnb, and we're not going to tell them we're throwing a big party. We'll book people. We're nerdy, right? We're not going to be too crazy. And we went down there, and we had, I think we limited it to 25, and I think we grew to like 30 people. And about half of us actually crashed in the Airbnb. Other people got Airbnbs locally. And then we all just wedged in the living room and the kitchen and anywhere that we could throw a chair, and literally did the event in the Airbnb. And so we were limited to the cost of the Airbnb. We didn't have to pay for a hotel's catering. We were able to go to Costco and load up on snacks and alcohol and food and whatever else. And we ran an event. We actually made about $1,500. So we actually paid off the debt from the first one. And nice. We said, this is what we want. It felt like a family get together, all hang out in a living room. We're bringing in speakers. We weren't paying the speakers. We didn't have the money for it, but we did pay for their travel. And so we had four or five speakers at every event, and that kind of became the new model. Let's keep these small, family-like atmosphere. And we show up the night before. We all kind of get together, meet for drinks, meet for dinner, kind of just an informal type setup. And just getting to like see, oh, yeah, I've talked to you on Facebook, or I've seen your posts, or hey. And most of us are from different markets. So it's one thing if I'm in Denver hosting a meetup with 30 other booksellers, we're kind of all technically competitors with each other. And so I don't want to tell them what I'm working on, and I have no incentive to share information. Versus when we get people from all over the country coming in, it's like, hey, I've heard some really interesting things about what you're doing up in Seattle or Portland or wherever. Tell me a little bit about this model. And so they're able to share, because me in Denver, for the most part, I'm not their competitor from somebody that's looking for the same local books there. So it's been a great source of just learn from each other, know that we're not alone, try and encourage each other. And we get people that reach back. I had a lady that reached out this weekend that said, our last one we just did in Austin, Texas. She goes, hey, I was just getting started. I had just recently sold, reached $5,000 in sales in books. And a couple of weeks afterwards, I hit $10,000. So I doubled my business, not doubled my profits like you're trying to do, but doubled the top line on a part-time gig. And I'm really excited about the future. So that's why we do what we do. And that's been amazing. And then I love to travel anyway. I'm on the road probably every other week, either looking for a book deal or just getting out of town and going and hanging out with some friends. And so we'll just do impromptu, just, hey guys, we're meeting for dinner and drinks Tuesday night, name a place. And we'll usually have 10 to 15 people show up. So those are really fun. You're not selling anything. There's no agenda. You're not bringing in a speaker. It's just, hey, I want to know what their pain points are so I can try and solve them with software, but also just to connect and learn. And hopefully I can help, inspire them. And I can also learn from some things that they're doing.
That is so cool.
So
I love it. So do you want to talk a little bit about what you do with Scout IQ? I know you mentioned that how it works a bit. Do you want to talk a little bit about what it does for people who need that?
Yeah. I'm not technical. I'm not a developer. I'm not a programmer, and we're selling software. So how do we get it made?
Yeah, that's
friends of a friend of a friend, right? Like if you're going to drop ship items, like I don't know how to print a book. I'm not manufacturing books. I'm just a middleman. And that was kind of the same thing there. It was, hey, I'm in the market. I understand the pain points and I know some of the data that's missing and I can make better decisions if we have data. And then you start looking at it going, man, it'd be great if I could, I can get the data. My brother works for Google. And so I approached him and said, hey, here's the challenges. Can we solve this with a database? And, can we get really creative on how we do it? He goes, absolutely. And so we started kicking the tires and eventually built the data and said, okay, that's there. Now we have to build a skin. We have to build an app around it. Well, who do we know that does that? And I went and found through a friend of a friend, found a developer who's become a good friend now and said, all right, what's this going to take? What's it going to cost? More importantly, once we build it, it's going to be a work in progress. Like we launched this thing November 17 of 2017. So we've been out for just over 2 years and we're still developing. We've got, two full-time guys that we're paying, contractors and my business partner is the developer as well. So we've got a lot of hands in it and it's, so we spend a lot of money on development every single month. It's not like it's done and it just works.
Yeah.
So I'm non-technical. And so part of that challenge is how do I manage a team effectively? How do I make sure that we got the right roadmap? And then how do I communicate that? So you kind of wear a lot of hats, which with my quarantine haircut, I try and cover it up as much as possible. But you gotta understand like the product development needs. You gotta understand what the pain points are of the market you're trying to serve. You've got to be present enough and be able to market and tell stories and get the word out on blogs and through other influencers. Like you're trying to do a lot of things, but mostly I'm trying to know what problems need to be solved. And again, because I'm a seller, I understand those problems and I'm basically building tools that I want, knowing that if I want it, more than likely other people do as well. And then it's listening. Our customers give us tons of feedback. Some of it's ridiculous and a lot of it's actually really good. And we can take that as a gift. You can choose to say, well, no, we can't afford to do that. Or no, that's not in our roadmap. Or you can go, yeah, it's a really good idea. We'll see if we can fit that in. And so the more in tune you are with the market, you just kind of listen and they tell you what they need. And then you decide if it's good enough. So that's kind of what it is. I'm a middleman going between the market and developers and trying to get stuff created. I brought on another marketer as well, another business partner, and he helps a lot with the kind of the social media, the SEO type spin. That's stuff I don't even really want to figure out. And so you bring the right people that have the skill sets that you don't have, and it makes for a really good team that way. So that's essentially what it is. And then I'll share kind of one piece. You got a question there.
Oh, no, you can go okay. Right ahead, but I do go ahead.
Yeah. So the interesting thing as we built it was I'm a data junkie. And again, I don't know the right word, but you think that everybody thinks the way you do. And so I said, we're going to build this super, like not intentionally, but we're going to build this super nerdy app with really good data. That's going to be just the best, most powerful book scouting tool out there. You're going to scan a book. It's going to tell you the sales history, if you should buy it or not, what the profit is, what the likelihood of selling it is, like all these metrics that are really important. And we knew that it worked. We tested it in our business. We had some friends that we brought in for beta testing, and we knew that we could take, like, before there wasn't like historical sales that were baked into the scouting decision. And I won't get into all the technicals of it, but essentially I had a friend who was buying a lot of books, and we gave him access to the better data in one of our beta tests. And we looked at his numbers like 8 weeks down the road, and he was a third more efficient in his business. So he was avoiding books that were unlikely to sell, even though Amazon said that they had a chance of selling. We had much better historical data, and we said, man, we're onto something. If we can make him be a third better at his business and a third better at his sell-through rates and be more effective, we know we can do that for the masses as well. So we set out to launch, like, our tagline was scout smarter, not harder. Like, we wanted you to be efficient. We love the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle. And what we got into when we launched it was maybe 5 to 10% of our customers were like, yeah, we're super nerdy too. We get it. We love it. This is amazing. We thought that would be all of our customers, because who wouldn't want better data? It turns out what people really wanted was the simplicity of, like, our app. It was kind of like, it was intentional. We make buy or accept or reject decisions. So the app turns green or red with all the numbers. And we thought, well, the green and red is just, that's just a little byproduct, but the numbers are what matter. That's the important part. And the feedback that kept coming in was, I don't really understand it, and I don't really care to understand it. I just bought all the ones that turn green and I'm making money. And At first I fought it, and I said, no, you need to understand why. We poured our hearts and souls. We have Google engineers working on this. Like, we have all this data. And they said, yeah, it's cool. I trust you. Like, you told me to buy it. I bought it. It works. I sold it. And now I'm going to buy more. Like, thanks. So they didn't, again, some people understand it, respect it, love it, appreciate the process. Most people are just trying to make money or find the joy of finding it. I joke that our business, we get two dopamine hits. One, you're out scanning through books, and it's about a 5 to 10% hit rate. If you're in a thrift store, it's sometimes a 2 to 5% hit rate. So you're going through 98 books that are all rejects, and it gets mindless. And all of a sudden you get bing, it's like a slot machine. So you get that dopamine hit of, oh my gosh, you know, this, I've got a, $50 textbook. Look at this. And so that's the first hit. And then the second dopamine hit is actually once it sells. So then you go list it, and all of a sudden you wake up one day and you open your seller app and go, whoa, I just sold that book for $50. So it's that constant thrill of the hunt and looking for what's next. And that was the hard part in software for me. That was one of the aha moments, was people don't necessarily care about everything that goes into it. Sure, it makes a great story. They might respect you more for going through that process. They just care that it works. And so we've really tried to optimize our marketing less from a standpoint of, hey, we can get you in the weeds and be really smart about it, to, hey, if you're scared about jumping into being an entrepreneur or running your own business, we make it easy. And so I hate that, because there's no such thing as easy money. And I really bucked against that trend. But we listened to the audience, we listened to our customers, and they said, hey, this works. You taught me how to do it. And so that's kind of what we've had to learn, our big takeaway here. Especially at a low price, we're not that expensive as a monthly type fee. We have to serve beginning customers for the most part. And what they need is a path forward. You have to show them through education and just make it really simple from a user interface and everything else. So that was our biggest takeaway going forward. And that's what we do every day. So I get to wear multiple hats, not only in the business, but we still try and run a book business. I'm still proud to say I sell more physical books. We sell more dollars in physical books every year than we sell in software. The margins in software are better once you get through the fixed cost of development. And so we actually make more money on the software now. And at some point, I'd love for software sales to eclipse physical books. But for now, we're riding both skis, physical books and software. We're building the software to solve our own needs and then selling that to other people. And it's really gratifying. We have, a lot of people try and a bunch of people churn out, and it's just not for them. And that's okay. We gave them the chance to try and the ability to look for something new. And we have a lot of people where we go to these turn the page events, and someone will come the next year and they wanted to come back, and, maybe they're a speaker this time around, or maybe they want to learn different things because they've grown and matured in their business. And that's really cool. There's people that have been in this space for 10 years, 15, 20 years. And in just my short time, there's I'd call them friends, not even air quotes, but they're friends, people that we chat with. I've golfed with several of them. I've had dinner several times with multiples of them. And that's what it's about. It's, you know, it's not just, hey, can I sell a widget as a book and flip it and make some money, and not just, can I sell some software? It's, can we use these to better our lives and then better the lives of those around us? So that's, you know, on a good day, that's what we think about. On bad days, we're worried about competition and hoping the app doesn't break and the servers are stable. But, you know, there's, you got to be careful what you wish for, because this job never turns off. People, you know, are messaging me late at night or dropping me a message on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, and they have questions, and we try and route them back to support, but ultimately we want to provide good service. So you're kind of always at, like, you have to serve your customers, and my customers are our app customers now. We had a golf trip we were on, and our servers went down at like 3 a.m. and somehow I happened to wake up. Like, I didn't have any alarms. My phone was on silent, but my body knew something was wrong, and I woke up and I was like calling my developer at 3:30 a.m. Like, hey, it's a Saturday. People are going to thrift stores today. We've got to get everything turned back on. I don't know what went wrong. I don't know if it's our fault or someone else's fault, but you know, you're just doing that. And you're like, I'm on vacation. I should be enjoying my time with my guy friends out golfing. And instead I'm like putting out fires, and I guess I wouldn't have it any other way, but that's my life now.
That's awesome, man. That's inspiring. I think it's a great way to wrap up. So if people are interested in finding out more about what you're doing, maybe checking out the blog or maybe checking out the app, where would you suggest people go?
Everywhere. Don't show up to my front door, I won't answer. But I guess different constituents. If you're looking to get started and learning a side business, I totally recommend books. Get your feet wet, learn that, and then don't feel like you have to be stuck doing books forever. But check that out. You can go to scoutiq.co. Somebody stole .com and they won't sell it to me. So scoutiq.co. Check that out. We've got lots of free training. You can check out a trial of the app and go see if you enjoy that adventure. If you're an entrepreneur and just want to network with other entrepreneurs, we've got a Facebook group. It's called the Book Flipper Community, but we talk about all kinds of stuff in business. And if you just want to drop a line, if you're in the Denver area and want to meet up for coffee or a beer once COVID blows over, you can email me, Caleb, C-A-L-E-B, at thebookflipper.com, and reach out. I love to network, not only just with customers to understand what they need. I love to talk to other booksellers because we can both benefit. The old industry I was in, you didn't talk to the competitors. They were the enemy. This industry and e-commerce in general, some people are very secretive and don't want to tell people what they're doing, but most people are pretty open. And there's so many ways to skin a cat, so many ways to make money. And so it's really, I love this community as a whole, because there's so many ways to learn from each other. And I can take things that you're doing in your business and apply them to mine, and that won't kill your business. We'll both benefit from that interaction. So yeah, that's it. You can check out thebookflipper.com or email me, Caleb, at thebookflipper.com.
Awesome. Well, I'll be sure to have those links in the show notes for anybody who wants to check that stuff out. Caleb, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks, Isaac.
Big, big thanks to Caleb for coming by and sharing his story with us. So much good stuff to take away from it. I love it. So, if you've been inspired, if you were intrigued, if your eyes have been opened on any of these topics, maybe it's about transparency with your team, I'm going to ask you a favor. If you've ever wondered how you can support this show, how you can help me keep this thing going for years to come, here's how you can do it. I would like you to share this story or a different story that you think would be useful. Share one of these stories with a friend. Maybe you have a friend who needs some inspiration. Maybe you have a friend who is stuck in their business for whatever reason, and they might find some value in one of the stories that you've heard on this show. Pull out your phone, please. Scroll through an episode that you think would help or would at least be inspiring, or that your friend would find some value, and share that story with a friend. I'll be forever grateful. Ah, Tuesday. I love it. And next Tuesday, we're learning secrets of selling an eight-figure business. You don't want to miss next week. I'll see you there.
Thank you for listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss out on the next story.